From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online and also my nephew's bedroom. The 247 site on the 247 Sports Network, that the UCLA site on the 247 Sports Network. But I was clarifying, that is not the UCLA site. My nephew's bedroom is not the UCLA site. Okay. Bruin Report Online is. But I realized my comma modifiers had messed that up. The lesson is, as always, don't change the intro.
Love it. Well, I'm Ryan Abraham, the 247 site on the 247 Sports or the USC site from my nephew's bedroom. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. I think I screwed up trying to
We're off to a rousing start.
I think I got it right, though. I said the 24/7, like what you did. Oh, you're having a beer. That's great.
I have an excuse.
Yeah. So I am in studio. And yeah, Ryan Abraham, I run the USC site. And David is in some place called Rook.
I'm in Bishop. I'm in the beautiful
town of Bishop. You're a knight? Where are you?
Oh. California.
Oh, Bishop. Okay. I wasn't.
Beautiful Bishop, California. It's neither a rook nor a knight nor a queen nor a king. It is, in fact, a bishop, a member of the clergy. I'll take my children tubing tomorrow down a mountainside. It's going to be glorious.
He is not a pawn. But yeah, we got to recap the post-Christmas Big Ten bowl games. I'm like 10, is it? It's a Big Ten, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not 12, not 16, not 18. Those bowl games, and we're going to preview a whole bunch of bowl games, the New Year's Eve / day bowl games, and two college football quarterfinal games that are involving Big Ten teams. One of the games where two Big Ten teams are facing off against each other in a rematch. So we're going to get to all that kind of stuff.
Great format. It's working out very well.
It's working good. I think so. I think we're good.
I'm being sarcastic, Ryan.
Oh. Well, no, I'm not. I think we're doing great.
Yeah, I think it's great that, you know, Ohio State gets to play Oregon in the second round. It's awesome.
Sure. But Penn State, you know, they get punished. They have to play Boise, you know, like. Right. So I get your point. Yeah. So anyway, if you have a question for us, we got a few emails coming in. Big10cast, all spelled out. @gmail.com, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678. We got a voicemail to play for you from our buddy Perk. A couple text messages we'll read for you guys. You can tweet us at B1G Podcast, and we are live on YouTube. So if you are in the chat, we will be able to check out your questions. Again, my screen is not pulling them up, so unfortunately, I won't be able to put them on the screen, but we will be able to look in the chat and read your questions or comments or whatever that is. And, you know, we'd love to hear what you have to say. If you want to leave a super chat, that's awesome. You know, it's the holidays. If you're feeling generous, we appreciate those, but you don't have to do that. And we do like when you leave us a 5-star review on that Apple Podcasting app. And I, in the mail, David, I just got back from Vegas yesterday, and I got our buddy John Embrea left me a package. Or sent me a package. He didn't stop by my house. I believe it's 10 or 12 Trader Joe's gift cards worth $42 a piece because Ohio State put up 42 moist points in their rout of Tennessee. So we have some really good gift cards to give away if you leave the best 5-star review of the week.
Well, I can announce the lucky winner because we only got one review. And frankly, not worthy of a winning.
We'll skip it. No, we're not going to. Yeah.
No. It's important because I want to clarify something. So 777-5426 is the username. And the subject line is great show. And the body is love the fun and analysis. That's unacceptable. That is far too positive. Oh, yeah. It is far too complimentary. I can't allow that. However, it's the only review. So I think this should incentivize others out there. Put your review in. Yeah. You might be the only one. And then it's not a competition. It's a competition of one. So I think we should give 775426 a $42 gift card.
All right. Well, the easiest money they've ever made from Trader Joe's. Yeah. So send me an email, whatever that number was that you had, at Ryan@USCFootball.com, and I will send you one of these Trader Joe's gift cards. So very cool. I might be going to the Rose Parade, David.
Oh, will this be your first time to the Rose Bowl?
I've been a couple times to the Rose Bowl. Yes, I've never been to the Rose Bowl.
See what I did there?
Yeah, I got it. I've gone to the Rose Parade twice, but it was like 2019, 2020, I think. Trader Joe's has a float in the parade. So if you're going to watch the parade, check out the Trader Joe's float. So
are you going to be on the float?
No, but I have tickets in like the Trader Joe's section. So you just have to get up early and be up there.
John and Brea with the hookups.
Taking care of stuff.
Hookups times 1,000.
And got some pins, like Trader Joe's pins.
Man among men.
Yeah. I think one year they gave us like stocking hats and they put the pins on them. It was pretty cool. But yeah, they do the Rose Bowl, the Rose Parade. Right. And it's nice to have like you're right on, I think it's Colorado. You have like grandstands and stuff. So you don't have to like worry about trying to like sleep overnight or anything like that. So have you done the parade? We've talked about this, right?
I've worked the parade. I have not gone to the parade.
Oh, nice. Okay. Were you like picking up horse poop or what were you doing?
No, I was part of a club in high school.
Oh.
Where one of the things we did was, I believe we trimmed roses, but I could be wrong. I'll have to consult with some of my high school classmates, but I believe that's what we were doing there.
Okay.
I didn't do a lot of it. I just kind of, you know, fucked around. Okay. Sorry, Griffin.
All right. We don't have a super chat, but I need this sound. Because if you listen to my advice and you took and faded every one of David's picks, especially for the entire bowl season, you would be loaded. You wouldn't have to be watching the show anymore. You wouldn't need the $42 Trader Joe's gift card. If you just went over to MyBookie and one, use the promo code POC first, so you double your initial deposit. Promo code POC, double your initial deposit. Then fade every one of David's picks and put that money towards that. You would be, they call it sitting in Fat City. David's 0-for-6 picking Big Ten bowl games. So you would be 6-0.
I should give my picks in advance so you can parlay them.
Oh, can you imagine the parlay? That'd be insane.
Oh my God. You'd be swimming like Scrooge McDuck through a sea of gold coins.
Yeah. But our friends over at MyBookie, they will take your action. They're taking David's action. They're loving that because he's 0-for-6. But they'll take yours if you want to fade him, you want to fade me, whatever you want to do. I went 1-2 2 weeks. I'm 2-4 in bowl games, but I was never happier to not get the last one right, because I knew if we got it right, I'd be 3-3, whatever, that's fine. But if we got it wrong, then Dave would be 0-6. And that's a way better storyline. We didn't want Colorado 1-11. We wanted them 0-12, right?
This point, I think the only pursuit for me is perfection, right?
I gotta try for it. you don't want to do that at my bookie, but you can do that promo code POC or Pac-12, our old one. They will give you 100% match for your initial deposit. So go check it out over at my bookie. You can bet the games. We got all the bowl games coming up. There's NFL stuff, playoffs, NBA, NHL, anything you want to bet. You can do that. They also have the live casino, which is a lot of fun. If you want to jump in there, I did some blackjack and everything. I enjoyed that. Just came back from Vegas, so you get a little of that gambling bug going. But go over to MyBookie, promo code POC for a 100% deposit match. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
Absolutely beautiful read.
Thank you, sir. I could do this one again. Dustiny, he gave us a super chat. A couple of West Texas Mikes. He goes, thank you for your service, Ryan and Dave. We all chipped in and have holiday gifts for each of you. We just need your addresses. Also, picking against Rutgers, Shiano equals painful trigger.
That's a great request for our addresses. You know, I just want to, you know, I want to be very protective. So I want to make sure I have the return address before you send that. So if you can just shoot that on over to us. I think, you know, we could maybe have a gift exchange of sorts.
Oh, I like that. Like a post-Christmas Secret Santa kind of thing.
I like the idea.
That is good. Yeah, we should not have we shouldn't have faded. We shouldn't have picked against Rutgers, your resident Rutgers fan, because they end up covering the spread. Now, we'll talk about it. They lost in terrible fashion, but they did cover the spread. Big Ten teams, David, we haven't shown a lot of faith, certainly you. in Big Ten teams. They are 5-1 against the spread in the bowl games. Isn't that interesting?
No, but you're I appreciate you pointing it out.
Yeah, you're 0-6. So the one I think we didn't have Indiana, right? I think we got that one. Oh no, I had I had Notre Dame. You picked Indiana. That was the one you picked Indiana to cover, and that's the one Big Ten team that did not cover.
Correct.
So you're good at that stuff. Okay, so we got to.
They nearly did.
Nearly backdoor.
Close counts.
Dusty says Dave is the ACC of picking bowls. Yeah, so I think the ACC. Correct me if I'm wrong in the chat. Is it 1-10 or 0-10 or something?
1-8 or 1-9 or something? I thought it was.
I think in games and then like 0-10 against the spread or something. It's something absolutely horrific for the ACC, which I had to consider when I'm doing the picks for one of our bowl games that'll be coming up. But we're going to start recapping the games from the post Christmas bowl run. And first up, we had the Rate Bowl with the aforementioned
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
Taking on the Kansas State Wildcats. Kansas State ended up winning this bowl game, the Rate Bowl, which is such a stupid name. This used to be the Guaranteed Rate
Guaranteed
Bowl.
Guaranteed Rate Bowl.
Rate, because they don't want to advertise that they're guaranteeing something, I assume. 44-41. Thing. But also, how do you Google Rate? Like, Guaranteed Rate, that's a company. Like, I can Google that. How do you Google Rate?
Yeah.
What happens? Anyway. 44-41, Kansas State beats Rutgers. Rutgers was controlling this for a decent portion of the game, especially on the ground. They were running it really, really well. They just couldn't stop Kansas State. Felt like whenever Kansas State got in space, they were able to make something happen. They ran the ball all over Rutgers, both out of the backfield, but also with the quarterback. Avery Johnson was... You know, I think I said this pregame and then went against my... Well, and then Rutgers ended up being better offensively than I was expecting. But when he's on, Kansas State's a really tough team to defend. And I think Rutgers found that out. But I think in as much as bowl games don't matter at all and you shouldn't care about them, I think for Rutgers, the number one thing to take away from this game is that Antoine Raymond is indeed very good. And you have another very good running back to take over for Kyle Menungai. So that's a positive, and the rest of it, who cares? It's a bowl game.
Yeah, Kyle Menungai did not play in this one. That's kind of a common theme. There's just a lot of stars that aren't going to be playing in games, and if they do, you know, it's sort of a big deal there. But you know, we saw Rutgers run the ball very effectively. Raymond went over; he had 113 yards in this game, and I thought early on, Kalik Manis, I put in my notes there. He was like Joe Montana. He was just completing passes like all over the place. We both were on Kansas State -6.5, and it wasn't looking good. I mean, Rutgers was just, really just keeping a two score game most of the time. But I thought he was just completing passes, looked like he was throwing in rhythm. Everything seemed to be working. They were able to run the football, and it just seemed like you were going to be holding Kansas State, you know, at bay. Now, Rutgers would score, and then Kansas State would score back. But there was enough cushion there that you just felt like there was no way Kansas State was going to be able to kind of overcome this. But then late in the game, Kansas State scores. And then, you know, Rutgers goes 3-and-out. Kansas State scores again. And I think Rutgers went 5-and-out or whatever over on downs. They couldn't put it together. And Kalik Manis didn't look the same, wasn't completing those passes that he was completing early in the game. And it just sort of worked out where, boom, Kansas State, took control, and they were just in. They take the lead. It was 44-41, and didn't let Rutgers come back to it. So it just seemed like everything was going Rutgers' way. And then just the final few series, it just – Kansas State needed it to go exactly this way, and it did not. And it did for Kansas State, and Rutgers kind of let it slip away. It has to be very disappointing for Greg Schiano and company. This was one that, if you watch most of the game, you're just like, there's no way Rutgers isn't going to win. And I had to go back and watch afterwards because I had to leave. And then someone even came up to me. We had like our event that night in Las Vegas. And someone was like, yeah, Rutgers won. And I'm like, no, you didn't see the end of the game. And he's like, what? Like, everyone, if you were watching this game, you just assumed Rutgers won. They did not. Covered. They didn't. Kansas State didn't win by 6.5. But this was one Rutgers had complete control and lost at the end. And we might have someone in the chat that's not super happy about that.
Correct.
What do we have here? Okay. Oh, let's see. Yeah, I thought someone put a comment in the chat.
Alex has a question, a semi-serious question. Would Dave want Jim Mora 2.0, were his flaws fully inherent to his ability to coach, in which case no retreads, or did he have off-the-field issues affecting his work performance? Beggars can't be choosers. I would take a fully engaged Mora in a heartbeat. I mean, if you look at the last 25 years, what's the best run of football UCLA's had? Was with that guy. And yeah, the back 3 years were pretty bad, but the front three were pretty awesome. So yeah, I would take him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, so yeah, Kansas State had a lot more yards in this game. You know, they were 7.5 yards per play. They moved the ball well. They converted, you know, almost 60% on third down. But Rutgers was in control and just kind of let this one slip away. But you can't let a team run for 347 yards. That's not going to go over well.
That will not win you many football
games. What Kansas State did. But it wasn't like a bunch of turnovers. I think each team had one turnover. It just was like Kansas State was moving the ball, but Rutgers had this cushion and just kept it. It was a 20-point second quarter that really sort of put, you know, Rutgers couldn't do any wrong before halftime, and then just sort of like played okay in the second half, but allowing those 15 points in the fourth quarter, that was a killer, and that's what sunk the Scarlet Knights. So a little disappointing for the Big Ten, but this was a game Rutgers had. It's one of those you're going to be thinking about it all offseason, David.
Yep, I would think. For sure.
Okay, next up we have
USC Trojans.
Taking on the Texas A&M Aggies. I guess we're planting some corn over here. Wow. USC won the Vegas Bowl 35-31. I would say it was an interesting game. Jaden Maiava, I think, has thrown so many pseudo interceptions, and it kind of caught up with him in this game and against Notre Dame, where it's like there were a lot of balls you're throwing up, jump balls, basically from the minute he started games, starting in what was that, early November. And in this one, he threw three picks. But also, he kind of giveth and taketh away. He also hits some big throws. He's got kind of a whole gunslinger vibe to him, and I think it ultimately kind of sort of paid off for USC. But also, I think it's an open question whether you completely ride with that heading into next year or whether you beat the bushes for somebody else. Anyway, this is a massive comeback for USC. They were down 24-7 in the third quarter. And then kind of everything started to go right for them. They started to cause more problems for Marcel Reed, who's really fast, by the way.
He's fast. And I thought he threw the ball really well. I thought he was good.
He's really good. And he's a true freshman.
I think he is.
That's
right?
Nuts. Yeah. Yeah. I thought for Texas A&M, I thought it was good that they got Reuben Owens back for this game, but you could also see that this was his, you know, first real game back, and he looked a little rusty, didn't look quite as fast and shifty as he has in the past. I think that hurt their running game to some extent. I thought Danton Lynn mostly did a decent job considering, you know, kind of handling a dual threat and the defense being, you know, in this transfer portal era, like kind of normal depleted for a bowl game, but a little bit depleted. Kamari Ramsey had that one awesome pick. But I thought, you know, USC showed some fight. And I thought kind of as predicted by me pregame, having a shorter rotation at receiver, I think paid off for them. You know, we saw a little bit more consistency from guys like Mekhi Lemon and Jacoby Lane. And frankly, even Kyle Ford. I mean, Kyle Ford caught the winning touchdown.
And
I thought he was, you know,
I think he was always kind of miscast as an outside receiver. I would have liked to have seen him in like a true spread as a Y, you know, as like a pseudo tight end. I think that would have been his probably best college role. Like if you could go back in time 10 years to when teams were just able to go four wide and have that be their entire offense, and have, you know, one big guy as your slot. But that didn't happen, but a nice little capper for him for his college career. But I think the shorter rotation at receiver, and then frankly, what I was kind of amazed by is that they ran it okay. I mean, it wasn't great, but with Amarian Peterson and Brian Jackson, they weren't awful. They at least had to be respected on the ground. And amazingly enough, Lincoln Riley actually went through periods of actually trying to run the ball, especially in the second half. So that was good to see. But I think a good capper for USC. They end the season how they began it, with a win over an SEC team in Vegas. But obviously, I think by and large, a very disappointing season overall. And I think they still have the same questions going into next year. Is Maiva the guy? Like, is he the guy to get this team back to competing for conference titles and potential playoff berths? I don't really see that, but maybe. We'll see.
West Texas Mike says Marcel Reed's a redshirt freshman. Yeah, but he was impressive to me. And the fact that USC was down 24-7 late in the third quarter and won 35-31 is baffling. If you watched what Texas A&M was doing in the first half, USC's offense was not going well. Jade Maiva looked like, I mean, he was just throwing up ducks to whoever. There was arm punts all over the place. But USC kind of got the stops, or Texas A&M screwed up. They, you know, they'd get a turnover or whatever it was. Texas A&M had a bad turnover in the end zone where it was a pass that should have been caught for a touchdown. It bounces off the receiver, and Achille Arnold picks it off. You mentioned Kamari Ramsey had a really nice-looking pick. But I thought Reed played really well. They just weren't able to finish some of those drives. And it's 7-7, and USC's driving late in the second quarter. And for whatever reason, Lincoln Riley takes his foot off the gas and they just end up attempting a field goal that they miss, and it's tied 7-7. And then in the second half, Texas A&M was rolling again. And then they built up that 24-7 lead, and it looked all but, you know, it looked over. And USC scores like four of their last five drives. One of them was a pick again. But and really shut down Texas A&M down the stretch. And even when Texas A&M scores late, USC takes the lead for the very first time. Texas A&M scores, and USC comes right back and scores again. I was impressed. Like, Maiva had a bunch of bad throws, but he made some good ones down the stretch and plays when you needed them. A lot of opt-outs. Like, Texas A&M's defensive line was pretty much opted out, but USC was down two starting offensive linemen and lost their left tackle, Elijah Page, early in the game, and their top two running backs and three of their top five wide receivers, and still were able to move the ball pretty well. I think Brian Jackson looked like a little Lendell White out there. And the like you were talking about, you know, that rotation, like a guy like Jacoby Lane, if he wasn't going to get the run, he ended up having three touchdowns in this game. Mekhi Lemon was looking like Puka Nacua out there. And yeah. I was like, the history on the prairie, the Oregon Trail stuff. I don't know if this was a common practice, David, but you know, you have too many kids. And you're like, it's not going to work. I don't have enough resources. I'm going to throw a couple of them down the well, and then the other two that are left are going to like thrive. That's probably common practice, right, David? Was that a, you know, that thing? That's kind of what happened. USC lost like a few of their kids, and then there was a lot more food to go around for the two that they had to feed. And man, they just shined. And so
that was beautiful.
Did you like that?
No notes. No notes. but yeah, USC ends with a win.
Yeah, they got a big win there. It was crazy. I think this was one of those. They lost a few games this season that they had no business losing. You could argue they had no business winning this game the way it was going. But you know, give them props for not throwing in the towel and coming back. So yeah, so a win for the Big Ten in that one, where, you know, against the SEC. USC's 2-0 against the SEC, David, and Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley's former team, won two games against the SEC all season. So
we got to start having the conversation about the SEC being ass this year.
They're not that good, I don't think.
Oklahoma lost to Navy. Get out of here.
Yeah, that wasn't that good. Okay, we got one more bowl game, and it included
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
You know, Boston College played, or sorry, the Boston College Eagles, whatever. Boston College played one other Big Ten team this year, and it was Michigan State. So you would have thought they would have been prepared for just how Big Ten this football game might get. Mm. But I don't think they were. Like, they did not seem fully ready for just how ugly, how hideous this football game is going to be. Like, if you told them pregame, your first score is going to come in the, let's make sure I've got this right.
Offensive score, yeah.
Yeah, your first score is going to, no. Your first score of any kind is going to come in the second quarter, and it's going to be 2 points. They probably would have had some guesses and stuff, but like a returned PAT for 2 points to build the rousing Big Ten score of 13-2 probably wasn't on their bingo card. Hideous football game. Absolutely lovely to watch. Everyone enjoyed it. Boston College turned it over on downs. So can I give you their drive chart in the first half here?
Yeah, I would love to hear it. Yeah.
Missed field goal, turnover on downs, turnover on downs, turnover on downs, end of half.
Yeah.
That was what they did. And Nebraska was not a whole lot better. They were interception, touchdown, fumble, touchdown, which then, again, the extra point got returned for 2 points, and then end of half. Hideous. And then the second half, not a whole lot better. Boston College finally got a little bit of a rhythm at the end of the game, but it was such little time left that I'm not even sure. Like, I think a lot of it was just kind of concession stuff. But Nebraska did have a punt blocked, which led to Boston College's final score to take it to 2015. But then Nebraska was able to just kind of run out the clock with about 4 minutes to go. Horrible game, but two notes. One, Nebraska finishes with a winning record for the first time in forever. Yeah. And two, they won a close game. This game finished within 5 points, and Nebraska won it. I don't know how many of those there have been, but savor it, Cornhusker fans.
Yeah, it shouldn't have been a close game, but it was. And like, I think Dustin in the chat mentioned that the footing, this was at Yankee Stadium, and there were dudes slipping all over the place. It was Big Ten-y, but the fact Boston College looked better early, but they couldn't finish the drives. And if you look at BC, they were pretty good on third down. They were 6 of 12 on third down, but 0 of 4 on fourth down. Like you mentioned, three drives in a row in the first half. You know, turnover on downs, turnover on downs, turnover on downs. Nebraska wasn't that good on third down. They were 3 of 11, but they converted.
No, they needed to get it to fourth.
They got 3 of 4 on fourth downs. I think you'd rather have that. But BC was like moving it, and then it's just sort of like shoot yourself in the foot and couldn't do it. There was, I think one was a fourth and one. They just couldn't get anything going in this one. And I, you know, there was opt-outs in this game for sure. I think most of Boston College's offensive line was out. Then their center, who was like all conference, he ended up getting hurt in this game. They have a defensive lineman stud, the defensive end. He was out. So there was definitely opt-outs, but it didn't feel like that was the issue. Maybe some of the fourth down stuff, they didn't trust it, but I thought Nebraska's front was very active and they made some really big plays in the backfield when they had to, you know, especially those big fourth downs, just not allowing, you know, just getting off the field, getting off the field, getting off the field. It was just like over and over and over again. And you know, Matt Rhule had mentioned, I think at the halftime interview about, we got to do a better job on third downs. It wasn't like, I mean, they did a good job on third. They stopped them on third down. They just, you know, but they end up stopping on fourth down too. So that was like a little weird for me. There was some drunk stuff in this game though, David. It wasn't just Big Ten-y. Nebraska, I think they were up 13-2. And I believe this was the third quarter, but they go for a fake punt. I think they were kind of near midfield, and it works perfectly. It's their, you know, their punter's kind of rolling out, and the up man did a route following where the punter was rolling out, throws the pass, and they get down there. Then they get down inside the red zone. I think they're inside the 10, and it's fourth down, and they're going to kick a field goal. And they do a fake field goal, and then that gets blown up. So I don't know if I've ever seen that on one drive where you do a fake punt and then a fake field goal, but they tried it. It just didn't work in that one. And then at the end, Nebraska was sort of just sitting on them, and then BC got a couple drives, a couple late touchdowns, and to make it closer. You didn't feel like Nebraska was in danger, but it was sort of like, oh my God, are they going to blow this? Are they going to blow this? Did not, but it was really weird. But those stops early in the game were big. They just never let BC do anything. When you look up at the scoreboard and you have two, like, and you know the offense had nothing to do with it. It was literally a blocked extra point. So the special teams in this game were huge. You know, block extra point for 2 points. You mentioned the block punt that led to a touchdown for BC. Fake field goal, fake punt. A lot of weird special teams plays in this one.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that was to see those in the same drive was kind of crazy. And a 13-2 halftime lead was bizarre. But good win for Nebraska. We both, what do we have? We had BC.
Yeah, we both took BC.
We took BC getting 3.5. So, there was a BC had a chance. They went for two after one of their touchdowns and didn't get it. If they would have got the 2-point conversion, we would have covered. But it ended up being a 5-point margin instead of three. So we were this close to covering that game. But I was, like I said, I was sort of rooting us for not to cover so you would go 0 for 6.
That would be beautiful.
Because that's the kind of guy I am. Okay. So those are the games. We are now, you're below 500 now, buddy.
Yeah.
65-67-1. I am 10 games above 500, 71-61-1. So my bowl picks haven't been great, but they are at least a little bit better than yours. We'll see. So we'll see what. We got some bowl games left and probably some more after that. So what we're going to do is we're going to preview. There's a few New Year's Eve and New Year's Day games, and then we'll do the college football playoff games. There is one, the Duke's Mayo Bowls. After that, we'll preview that one. I think I put in the preview that we would preview that, but we'll preview that after these games because we're going to do a recap after the first to start the new year, recap everything that was going on, and we can preview if there's one or two Big Ten teams left in the college football playoff. We'll preview that and Minnesota in the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Does that sound good, David?
Beautiful. Sounds gorgeous.
You love,
man,
all that stuff? Okay. So let's get through. We're going to start on Monday. We've got
Iowa Hawkeyes.
They're taking on number 19, Missouri Tigers. More of a cat, but it's okay.
Yeah.
In the Transperfect Music City Bowl in Nashville, Tennessee. This game's at 11:30 a.m. on ESPN. 8-4 Iowa, 9-3 Missouri. Let's make sure our lines line up. Missouri is indeed a 2.5-point favorite. Here's what I did, Ryan. Looked up, is Caleb Johnson playing in this football game?
He is.
And not. Can I tell you the answer?
He is not.
He is not playing in this football game. So I think Missouri is a paper tiger. But I don't think Iowa is any sort of tiger without Caleb Johnson. They don't have an offense without him. So I cannot in good conscience pick Iowa. Could they turn this into an Iowa football game? Oh, you bet your ass. Could this finish like 7-6 Iowa? Yeah, absolutely. But I think by and large, you're going to see Missouri win this, you know, 7 times out of 10 pretty comfortably. So I'm going to take the Tigers.
I'm going to go with Missouri as well. The fact that Caleb Johnson isn't going to play is a big factor in that. Now, Kamari Moulton, who was the starter before Caleb Johnson was a starter for whatever reason, he's back. I think he has 377 yards on the season, but I don't think I think there's a big drop off there. You know, Missouri likes throwing the football around. Luther Burden, the third, is their best receiver. He's not playing in this game, but they got a bunch of other guys I think that can kind of step up. And this is a team, they were 9-3. And all of their losses were on the road against teams that were like in the playoff or in the mix for the playoff. Like, I think Missouri's a pretty darn good team. And Iowa can't be too, but Caleb Johnson was their guy. Without him, I'm going to take Missouri in this one. It's only 2.5 points. So I'm going to agree with you and go with the Tigers, even though you're 0-6 and I should probably just pick opposite you, whatever you pick. But I was going to go with Missouri.
You absolutely should. You absolutely should.
Yeah, and I don't know what the people in the chat think, but I think they're on the Missouri train as well. But yeah, like Missouri, like we can make fun of the SEC and stuff, but they, you know, they beat everybody except teams that were, they lost on the road to teams that were like going to or going to be potentially in the college football playoffs. So I will go with the Tigers on this one. Another Big Ten SEC matchup. This one, we've got
Michigan Wolverines.
Scratch.
They are taking on the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Is that Tide?
Is that good?
Yeah.
It's like the Tide.
It was like a Tide.
9 a.m. on ESPN, number 11, Alabama. They're 9-3, taking on Michigan in Tampa, Florida in the ReliaQuest Bowl. Alabama is currently a 13.5 point favorite. So here's the deal. I also looked up opt-outs for Michigan, and it is significant. Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant, Colston Loveland, Donovan Edwards, Khalil Mullings, Miles Hinton. They're having a lot unavailable. And for Alabama, Jalen Milroe is playing in this game.
Yeah.
He's going to be playing football in this football game. Look, Alabama's been disappointing this year. I don't think they have been as down as Michigan is. I like the job. Honestly, I like the job that Sharon Moore has done. I just don't like their chances against a team as talented as Alabama. I'm not sure I don't like them as much as 13.5 points. But I think the situations where Alabama doesn't blow Michigan out are where Michigan is able to just completely muddy this up.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure they have the bodies to do that in this one. Mason Graham is an important part of ever making that happen. And he's not available. Kenneth Grant, not available. So I will take Alabama minus the 13.5. I think Jalen Milroe's probably gone after this year. I think he's got another year of eligibility, but I think he's done. So he's going to want to go out on a high note. I think Kalen DeBoer is going to want to get to 10 wins to make this season slightly more palatable for Alabama fans. So give me the Crimson Tide.
You're forgetting about Big Ten kicker of the year, Dominic Zvada. Mm. He's playing, David. He's going to play. So that's why I think they're going to score enough field goals to keep it within 13.5. Here's the deal. Yes, I don't like that Michigan has all of these opt-outs. It is a lot of points. I can't, with good conscience, go against knowing, one, the Big Ten is 5 out of 6 covering spreads. And you are 0-for-6 picking. So 2 games in a row, I can't pick against the Big Ten and with you. So I will pick with the Big Ten and against you and feel pretty good about that, even though I know Michigan's got a bunch of guys opting out of this game. But that's a lot of points. Plus, the ReliaQuest Bowl, like one of my favorite bowls ever.
One of the best bowls. It's such a familiar household name.
Yes. Where the hell is that? I don't know. I had to look to see, like, what is – oh, the Q
is capital.
Beautiful,
sunny Tampa.
Yeah, the Q is capital. Those Michigan guys are going to go down there, enjoy the sun. You know, are they going to beat Alabama? No, but they'll keep it close. You know, lose by 10, cover, get out of there, maybe stay. All right, so we're going to differ on that one. You have Alabama, I have – Michigan, let's go to El Paso, David. One of our favorite places on the planet, of course.
Oh, yeah. Very
much so. Washington Huskies.
The Washington Huskies are taking on the Louisville Cardinals.
I guess it's time to pick a new pope.
Not that Cardinal, but again, I like it. 11 a.m. on CBS in the Sun Bowl, one of the best bowls, the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl in El Paso.
Yes.
Louisville. 8-4, taking on Washington, 6-6. Louisville is currently a 2.5 point favorite, but I looked at it. Louisville is going to be missing its very well known to the podcast starting quarterback, Tyler Shuck, depending on whether you are familiar with the English language or not.
Can Miller Moss play? No, he can't play.
So I don't know their backup quarterback situation, and frankly, I'm not going to look it up. But they're also missing a bunch of other guys. Washington, just eyeballing it for me, they're not missing as much. one of their left tackles, some of their defense, but they're not missing, you know, like either of the quarterbacks. You know, they've got all their pieces that are kind of necessary still intact. So I'm going to go Washington here. I think they've got, you know, I think they've got the horses to do this. I'm reluctant to pick against good old Jeff Brohm, who is coaching at his alma mater these days, because he's a little bit of an offensive wizard.
He's good.
But I'm gonna ride with the Fishman. I think they, between Jonah Coleman, Damon Williams, Will Rogers, who knows if he's going to play, but between those guys, they've got some offensive firepower. I think they will be able to control this game and win, which will cover the spread of 2.5 points.
Yeah, getting a couple points here. I like Washington as well. Part of this being, what team did we say was terrible against the spread, or what conference was terrible in this bowl season? The ACC. Where's Louisville play?
ACC, baby.
Do you know where they play? ACC. Big Ten, ACC. I'm going Big Ten.
Honestly, if you hadn't prefaced it with that, I wouldn't have known. You know, like, what league is anyone in these days?
They're still in the ACC. So yeah, that's kind of cemented it for me. I think the line was at 4.5, I think, at one point. So maybe it's come down more, a little bit, or maybe I don't think it's moved. That's the latest line you have, right? It's 2.5. That's the one you saw.
Correct.
Okay. I think I've seen up to 4.5 at some point, but I'll go with the Fishman. Tony Tiger Bowl. Great bowl. Some bowls named stink. I mean, Tony Tiger Bowl is great. Pop-Tart Bowl was great. Lived up to the billing. Got to see that the other night. That was kind of fun to see. But yeah, Tony the Tiger, man. It's good stuff. Let's see if the Big Ten can get a win against the ACC in this one. All right, we got another between the Power 2, Big Ten and SEC. This time we got
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
They are taking on the South Carolina Gamecocks. Cock-a-doodle-doo, I guess.
Yeah.
Sure. That wasn't a very good cock-a-doodle-doo, but what are you going to do? This is 12 p.m. In Camping World Stadium in Orlando, the Citrus Bowl. ABC, number 15, South Carolina, taking on number 20, Illinois. Both teams are 9-3. South Carolina is perhaps strangely a 10-point favorite in this game.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see why that is. Illinois has not had many announced opt-outs at this point. I don't know if they're keeping it under wraps, because theirs seems unusually low, the number. I think this is maybe just some of that famous disrespect of the Big Ten by the honks that live in the computers preparing lines in favor of the SEC. I like Lenore Sellers. I like South Carolina. I think they were a fringe playoff team. But you know what Illinois was this year? Also a fringe playoff team.
They were. They just weren't talked about as much.
You know, I mean, maybe Illinois has a lot more opt-outs than have been announced, and we will find that out on New Year's Eve. But with the knowledge we have, I'm taking Illinois in those points, baby.
All right. Well, I'm going to go opposite you, which always feels good because you're not very good at this. I think Lenore Sellers is like legit. I mean, he's 6'3", like 245 pounds or whatever. Dude is a beast. What I've seen from Luke Altmyer, like, okay, there's been some good stuff. There's been some meh. Is South Carolina, do they care? Because they were, you know, in the talks of making the college football playoff, but they were the team of those three to get in that had lost to Alabama and had lost to Ole Miss. So they didn't really have as big of a case, but they looked good in the games they were playing. You know, beat Clemson, that was a college football playoff team. I just
fraudulent, but yes,
fraudulent, yes, but they were in there. So, yeah, I'm gonna.
How did they look against college football playoff teams? LSU, Ole Miss, and Alabama.
Yeah, no, not they. Yeah, that was not very good. But I'm gonna.
Oh, those teams didn't make the college football playoff. Sorry,
they did not. Sorry. No,
my confusion.
Yeah, we'll see.
SEC is ass. It's an ass league.
Okay.
And you have bought the propaganda.
No, I just, this game, for whatever reason, I haven't felt what I feel good about Illinois, they kind of shit the bed. Sorry, Griffin. So I'm gonna roll with South Carolina on this one. Just a hunch. And I got to go opposite you, and that's never
obviously makes sense.
Never a bad thing.
Totally makes sense.
I mean, that's the argument for everything, right? You like you feel good about it. All right, let's get into the college football playoffs. So do you know what this is, David? So they're not four teams anymore. They're doing 12.
I wasn't aware.
Yeah, and last week they did, or 2 weeks ago, they did home games. And then some of those teams that won their home games, they've advanced. And we call this the quarterfinals. So there's eight teams left. Everybody's playing. Neutral site games. And it won't be as exciting as some of these home games, but there'll be some fun ones. So the first one, we're here with this New Year's Eve game, David. We've got
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. And they're taking on the Boise State Broncos. This is 4:30. That one was actually pretty good. I finally nailed the Broncos.
That was good.
Yeah. 4:30 p.m. on ESPN. This is, I think technically, this is the Fiesta Bowl in Glendale, Arizona, or otherwise known as the College Football Playoff quarterfinal at the Verbo Fiesta Bowl. Number six, Penn State, 12-2, taking on number three, Boise State, 12-1. So surely Boise State must be favored in this game since they are the better seeded team.
They are not.
Obviously. Oh, wow. This is the first I'm hearing of it. Oh, well, certainly it's got to be like a pick 'em, right?
I mean,
certainly pick 'em. The line hasn't moved by half a point since you wrote it in the document 45 minutes ago in the favor of Penn State. Certainly that hasn't happened. Penn State is currently favored by 11.5. Are we taking that or your original 11?
Let's do 11. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm taking Penn State.
You're picking, you absolute cheater. Okay, so this matchup, I think if you look at just the numbers, you would think, oh, Boise State can keep it close. But the reality is this is Mountain West versus Big Ten. It is under talent versus talent. And I don't see, you know, this isn't Chris Peterson versus Oklahoma in 2006 or whatever that was. I think Boise State isn't going to, like, fall under anyone's radar. I think everyone knows Ashton Gentry's really good. I think Penn State's going to have a game plan designed to stop him. And they're going to force, what's his name, Maddox Madsen? What a name. They're going to force Boise State to make some throws. And I don't know how capable they are of doing it. I think they're going to be fairly successful in taking Gentry away. He's put up a lot of numbers in some games against Mountain West opponents. And I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I think he's had a spectacular year.
And
I think he's going to be a really good NFL quarterback or NFL running back down the road. But I think Penn State is kind of designed for taking away what is effectively a I won't call it fully one-dimensional. I think they built some passing stuff off of their very good rushing attack. But I think if you force them to be a passing attack, things start to wilt pretty quickly. So I like Penn State in kind of their second straight blowout here. I think they're going to be able to take away Gentry and make him give him a super inefficient 80-yard day where he has to carry the ball 21 times to get 80 yards. And that'll be enough to I think sit on this team, score enough, and walk away with a 31-13, something like that.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Penn State as well. Now if you recall, Boise State went to Eugene and gave Oregon all they could handle, and Ashton Gentry had a huge game. I think it's part of the reason why he finished as high as he did in the Heisman, because when he did get to play against the number one team in the country, he didn't have his 80-yard game. He had a really good game and looked like the same kind of guy that he looked against when he played Mountain West.
That was when Oregon was playing like ass, though.
They weren't playing as good.
That was before peak powers Oregon.
Yeah, when they were playing Idaho. Remember, someone of our commenters said that whenever they play teams from Idaho, they just doesn't go very well.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to lose to Idaho the previous week. It wasn't until probably 3 weeks later where they really started to hit their stride.
Yeah, but and this is in the Fiesta Bowl. Boise State 3-0 in the Fiesta Bowl, but Penn State's also undefeated in the Fiesta Bowl. They've had some magic there. Won a national the national championship against Miami.
You love irrelevant data points.
That's not irrelevant
so much.
I'll give you
the
the program's record in that bowl game previously?
It's the Fiesta Bowl. You remember
who gives two shits?
Oklahoma Sorry, game? Griffin. I mean, that's like a like Chris Peterson, the classic Statue of Liberty.
I couldn't
wedding
tell you
proposal.
I couldn't tell you what game it had been in. The Fiesta Bowl, great.
It was the Fiesta Bowl.
Absolutely fantastic. I know his name, Ian Johnson. How about that?
There you go.
I think I knew the girl's name until very recently, but it's fallen away from my
probably because the beer in your hand. Here's a relevant data point. Abdul Carter, 11 sacks on the season. He's been snubbed by some of the bigger defensive awards.
You calling a 5-sack game?
No. I'm not sure about that. But he is not happy. He's highly motivated and wants to make a name for himself. And you don't do that by sacking Boise State's quarterback. You do it by stopping their Heisman Trophy finalist running back. I think he's going to be coming after Genty, want to put a stop to it. He likes to do that. I feel like this – I love what I've seen from the Penn State defensive front. They have not allowed a 100-yard rusher – all season, except one time. Do you know who that was?
Who?
Woody Marks, USC. How funny is that? USC's
the man himself.
USC had no business being 6-6. But anyway, if I'm not mistaken, that's the only 100-yard rusher they allowed.
Pretty amazing considering Woody Marks was like their fourth offensive option this year. That's pretty impressive.
I know. It's kind of nuts. But I feel like this is a really good front for Penn State. I think James Franklin, you want to give him crap. Like, these aren't the kind of games he loses. You know, SMU, it wasn't a brand. You know, they outclassed them. I feel like they can do the same with Boise State. Like, if this was Texas, I mean, obviously Texas is better, but it's a name, and that's a different story. This is like – these are the kind of games I feel like James Franklin can win at Penn State. So I like him. I like Penn State this one. I'm going to lay the 11 and feel pretty good about it.
All right, I love it.
So we're in agreement on that one. This doesn't make me feel good, but whatever. That's New Year's Eve. Let's go to New Year's Day, baby. I got two buttons to press on this one. There's two presses. Right. We've got
– Whoa! Oregon Ducks.
And
the Ohio State Buckeyes.
2 p.m. ESPN, the Rose Bowl. It's at least a classic Rose Bowl matchup, so that's nice. Oregon taking on Ohio State. Ohio State's a 2.5-point favorite. I don't have much analysis. I'm just going to say it right here. Emotional pick, I'm taking Oregon. My head entirely. Like 100% of my brain says Ohio State. 100%. There isn't a shadow of a doubt in my brain that Ohio State is going to win this by like 14. But I am taking Oregon because I can't do that to myself. I can't do it to you, the listener. I can't sit here and say, oh, Chip Kelly's going to blow out the number one team in the country in the Rose Bowl, and that's fine. No, I'm not going to have that story. I'm not going to support that story of, oh, Chip Kelly's come back to the Rose Bowl. This is where he used to coach home games. No, we're not doing any of that, okay? I don't care. Oregon. I'm taking Oregon, and that's it. I know they're not going to win the game. I understand that. But I'm taking them regardless.
Wow.
Go Ducks.
All right. Well, I'm going to take the Ohio State Buckeyes. Going opposite you always feels good. It's more of a gut feeling here, that game in Eugene.
Shut up. No, it isn't. Every ounce of your brain is telling you Ohio State as well.
It is. But now I want to change it since your brain is telling you Ohio State's going to win. That's telling me that Oregon's going to win if you're, following your brain. But you eventually followed your heart.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, whatever you feel best is where I'm
going to. My heart full of hate. I'm following that.
You know, it's the holidays. Heart full of hate. That's where you want to go, you know? So, yeah, I'm going to take Ohio State in this one. Obviously, that was their best game of the season against Tennessee. It was at home. There was a lot of pressure on the Buckeyes. I mean, talk about Ryan Day being fired, just losing to a, you know, 3-touchdown underdog and still getting into the playoffs, still getting a home game. But give the Buckeyes credit. They took advantage of that. Like, should they have been in that position where they get a home game and all that? No, but hey, that's the way the system is. And they took advantage. And now everyone's like, oh crap. It's like waking the sleeping giant. Like, oh, if you're going to throw to the best receivers in the country, that's probably going to go over well. And oh, you have two of the best running backs in the country too. Let's utilize them. Perfect. Yeah. If Chip Kelly calls a game where he looks like he cares, where he looks like he gives a shit, sorry, Griffin, then I feel like they can do more damage against Oregon. And Oregon's going to give up point. Like, when they've played the better teams, they've given up, you know, in the 30s, right? I think Ohio State's going to score in the 30s. The way the Ohio State defense is playing, I mean, Oregon's going to score, I think, too. But I just feel like there's an extra stop or two for the Buckeyes, and then they can get this win. It's not that many points. I mean, if you win by field goal, Ohio State covers. The last time it was a one-point game, you know. I don't know if it's going to be this time. I feel it's going to be close, but I like Ohio State by like a field goal or so. So I'm going to take the Buckeyes.
Perfect.
Yeah. So I know that's where we are with that. All right. So should we take a break?
Yeah. My brother's internet is getting very shaky. So okay. let's try to wrap this up quick.
Okay. Take a break and back in a minute. Do some questions. All righty. We're back here on the Podcast of Champions. I think, what is the first one we got? Is it the, I think it's,
we just got a voicemail from Perk.
I got that loaded. Do you want to?
Okay. It's the Naked and Afraid.
Oh yeah. You do that one. Okay.
David and Ryan together on Naked and Afraid. There's really no other choice, though. Putting Dave on Love Island is worth exploring. I wish I understood these jokes.
Okay, so Naked and Afraid is like it's like Survivor, but they just put you out in the wilderness like nude, and you could like
Naked and Afraid. Got it.
Yeah, okay. And it could be Got cold it. And things
it's
like
all
that.
All there in the title. Got it.
So
all
you right.
Love
so you
Island. Not, I'm assuming I'm finding a love interest on an island.
I don't know that one as much, but okay. But Naked and Afraid is like a survival show that we would both be on. So Kevin wants to know.
I would love to be Naked and Afraid with you, Ryan.
Oh, there you go. I think Survivor stuff I can do pretty well. But I would put like loincloth stuff on, you know, make some, a little, something loincloth out of leaves. Some of the people on the show, they're just like sit around naked and they don't even like cover themselves.
Yep.
Kevin, holiday season, favorite Christmas song and movie.
I am not religious. I am not Christian. And, so keep that in mind, but the answer is Oh Holy Night, for favorite Christmas song. I think it comes down to cultural Catholicism at a certain level. As for movie, I think I'm just a Home Alone guy. I'm a pretty basic guy with this. I'll go with Home Alone here.
Interesting. Okay. The tradition, I like flipping over to TBS and A Christmas Story. It's like one of my favorite movies, but I do love Elf. And you know, and Die Hard, of course, like one of the best Christmas movies of all time. Die Hard's great. There's, you know, I like all the kind of Christmas songs, but the Waitresses, Christmas Wrapping, if you haven't heard that one, that's a pretty good one. I like that. The Paul McCartney one is pretty good. I like that.
No, it isn't. Come on.
You don't like the Paul McCartney one?
It's trash.
Okay. But yeah, Christmas Wrapping. You go with that
Simply
one.
Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
You don't like that one?
It's horrible. Okay. Absolute dog shit. You actually are a Catholic. Where's your traditionalism?
Well, you know, I used to like the Baby It's Cold Outside, but then it got all rapey.
No. Like, where's your
A Holy Night or
We Three Kings of Orient Are? Yeah. Where's your
Come All Ye Faithful?
I saw three ships come sailing in. Like, where's O Holy Night? O Holy Night whips ass. It whips full ass. Where are you on?
I think we went over this before. Yeah, you did like it. All right. Okay. Well, this is a long text message.
All right. Next one. All right, this is a very long one.
Yeah.
I don't really want to read this.
Should we not?
Gents, I've sensed Ryan's judgment through the microphone for some time. I bet Dave himself is a bit perplexed. Why does the Ohio State-Michigan game carry this much headspace across the two programs? As someone who grew up a Michigan fan but now a passionate Bruin alum, allow me to explain. The game is a special rivalry in many ways, but what makes it so unique is actually very obvious. There is an 80-plus year history of these two Titans having their entire season come down to that last game. In the Bowl and BCS era, the winner almost always went to the Rose Bowl. In the 14 playoff era, 6-10 matchups saw a Big Ten title, and 6 out of 10 matchups saw a Big Ten title and playoff berth on the line. It's the game with the most top 5 matchups, top 10 matchups, conference title deciding matchups, and more. The winning team could piss in the other cereal, and the loser would have to live with it for 365 days. This makes it so that the off years, when so much isn't on the line, there's enough hysteria and pageantry built up around the game. No other fan base has a rivalry with these kinds of stakes in it. In the Iron Bowl, Alabama is clearly better than Auburn. OU and Texas could be there, but they play early in the season. Notre Dame and USC don't play in the same conference. I do have to say, for my UCLA fans out there, there was a time from like the 1970s through the late 90s where this was sort of what UCLA-USC was. It may never be there again, but I just want you to know that.
Yeah.
Anyway, on with the message. From that very obvious foundation, you get some great stories and mythology. Coaches are judged by this game. Bo versus Woody in the 10-year war. Earl Bruce fired but carried off the field in his last game for beating Michigan. John Cooper going 2-10-1 with Michigan spoiling multiple national title bids. Harbaugh nearly getting the axe for starting 0-5. Now Ryan Day is getting the same treatment. It is true today's system doesn't lend itself to these stakes, as this year is proving. It will take a long time before fans get to a place where they see this game as less significant as a playoff win. No, it's not bigger than winning the national championship, but that's the only thing that will be seen as more important than winning that last game. Yes, very long text, but I think all the context is needed for those who haven't followed Big Ten football and are amused by why fans are behaving this way. Hope that helps. Go Bruins.
Thanks.
Good. In there.
Your audio changed while we were talking about that.
Was it better or worse?
It's quieter, but that's okay. I don't know if you hit the...
I have nothing to do with it.
Okay. Let me play the voicemail. The next email, I'm not sure, there's like tweets and stuff. Take a look and see. But it's West Texas Mike. But I'll play the voicemail for you, and you take a look at the next one. Here we go.
Hey, what's up, Ryan and Dave? It's Perk. Just kind of curious to get your guys' thoughts on where you think the NFL and kind of the pros are gonna, how they're gonna evaluate quarterbacks in the future, because it seems like college football was really following the trends of college basketball and the NBA, where as soon as the players were good enough to go to college, as soon as they were good enough to go to the pros, they should. And also from the professional organization standpoint, you want to get these guys as young as you can. But, you know, with the success this year of Bo Nix and Michael Penix, you know, two guys that played a decade of college football, it seems like the tide is turning a little bit, at least at the quarterback position, of valuing guys that played a lot of games in college, and maybe being someone that started 4 or 5 years or whatever, isn't something that's frowned upon. So I was curious if you guys think that that trend will kind of change with quarterbacks, or do you think it will fall back more in line of, hey, as soon as these guys can go, they should, and they're going to kind of go for more of the Anthony Richardson type. Curious to get your guys' thoughts. Hope you guys had a great Christmas with your family, and have a happy new year.
Thanks, Perk. I think it's a case, get David's thoughts, but I think it's a case-by-case thing, because there's going to be like the Anthony Richardson where he's still 19 years old or whatever, and he's got a lot of upside, and you know, you do have that limited rookie window, and we saw what Denver was able to do. They have to cut, their starting quarterback, Russell Wilson, who they owed a ton of money to, and the Steelers get him for $1 million or whatever. If they can get, though, a rookie quarterback that they can rely on, it's basically free, and you have them for a few years. So there's an advantage to that where you get an older guy, and you have them on that rookie deal for a while, and you don't have to really pay them. So if it's a 3-year project, by the time they get good, you're going to have to pay them. But you're going to see guys like Diego Pavia, who's going to be around college football for a while, and just get paid better in college than they would have in the pros. So I think it just sort of depends. But a guy like Michael Penix, yeah, he's, you know, was he turning 30 or whatever? But he, you know, you would rather get him on the field faster. He's going to do the same thing. He's going to take over for a really expensive quarterback. But it would be harder to sit around and wait for him for a couple of years because he's already older too. But I think it's a case-by-case sort of thing. There's going to be good college quarterbacks that stick around longer because they can get paid more in college. And then other guys you want to get to the pros. But for the NFL teams, if you can find that rookie that you can rely on and start, you've got a window of having a star quarterback without much cap hit. And it can even make up for past mistakes when you sign some guy that you shouldn't have for way too much money.
Yeah, I'll try to be quick because my internet is dying rapidly.
Sorry.
I agree with everything Ryan said about economics of it. I think it's also cyclical. I think there's not cyclical, actually, partially cyclical. Like, I do think these trends go in certain directions where, like, okay, these experienced guys worked out, so maybe we'll start drafting more experienced guys. But I think on top of that, there's also just at some level, you got to take things case by case. And Bo Nix, Michael Penix, they had I don't even know if it's unique anymore in college football because it's going to be maybe trending a little bit more that way. But they both played first a ton of college football. And this, I think, is critical. They had to learn a new offense at least twice. And if you want a NFL-ready quarterback, a pro-ready quarterback, he's got to be able to learn your offense super quickly. And I think for both of those guys, playing in offenses that are – they're not like what you will have in the pros, but I think offenses nowadays are a little bit more closer to what's actually happening in the NFL on a daily basis. But I think it was kind of somewhat unique circumstances. But then I also think there's nothing – having a lot of experience in an offense that actually, you know, it's not like 20 years ago, if you had a quarterback who had a lot of college experience, it might've been a lot of college experience running the option.
Yes.
That doesn't translate, but Bo Nix, I mean, for whatever you want to call him, a check down Charlie or whatever it is, he was running an offense that isn't that dissimilar from what they run in the pros.
Yeah.
Michael Penix was running an offense that's very similar to what they run in the pros. Not quite as complicated, maybe, but similar concepts, similar structures, similar route combinations, all that kind of stuff. It's not nothing you see in college football is, especially at the high levels anymore, that unique. It's a lot of execution based stuff or how you're moving your tight end, but a lot of it is kind of samey stuff. So I think there's a little bit more translation able to make from just the college level, and then experience absolutely should play a role in any evaluation you make.
I think in the chat, Dustin said that the male brain doesn't fully develop until 27 years old. That's critical for a quarterback. I think the development part of it, and Dave's got good points there, is a big factor too, where sometimes you're going to a smaller school and then you bump up to, you could be Cam Ward and be at Incarnate Word.
Yeah.
And then Washington State, and then Miami. And it's like, that's a lot of development there. You've switched. You've already moved up. You know, it's not from one thing to high school to college, but you've moved up in college too. And I think that helps you make that transition to the NFL. So they're getting more information at the NFL level. And there seem to be less busts, I guess, from some of the high, you know, quarterback picks. I mean, this was a really good year this past year. To have all those guys looking like they're doing well is pretty impressive. So yeah, I think it's changing. You know, so we'll see. What do you make of
West Texas Mike says it's just a bunch of tweets. We'll have to do that another time because I don't have time to watch this stuff right now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We can't see the tweet that just came in late and I didn't get to see those tweets and stuff. But David's losing his internet up in Rook. So we will. Where are you? No, where are you? You're at Bishop.
Bishop, California.
Beautiful. So where is that, like, for people that aren't familiar with the state?
If you go up the 395 between the Sierras and the White Mountains, if you are trying to go to Mammoth, it is on the road to Mammoth. Mammoth is about 40 minutes away. That's where we'll be going tomorrow morning to do some tubing down the slopes.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds awesome.
It'll be fun.
Do you want to give us a tubing pose or what would you like? How do you want to? That's a good pose. I like that. Cool. There's David going down the mountain. So that'll wrap it up. So we'll, I hope you guys enjoy all the games. Have a great new year. And then we will come back in early 2025 and recap.
Yeah, I'm thinking Thursday. We're thinking Thursday.
Thursday, which is that
Penciling Thursday the 2nd.
The 2nd. Okay. So we'll come back after New Year's. We'll be able to preview Minnesota and then let you know if Penn State's moved on to the semifinals and also which of Oregon and Ohio State. They guarantee Big Ten is in the semifinals. We just don't know if it's going to be Oregon or Penn or Oregon or Ohio State and if Penn State will join them. Should be a lot of fun. So for David Woods, drinking a beer in Rook, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.